good. I feel so numb, yeah.
Well, shift stock has now concluded as we've had two articles of impeachment get voted out by the Democrats in the House of Representatives. A near unilateral party line vote in terms of bringing the charges against the President of the United States, obstruction of Congress, and obstruction of justice. You have one quasi-conservative defected, and that was Justin Amash. That was understood to be the case. But other than that, it was a strict party line vote. Not one Republican voted to push the articles of impeachment against the President of the United States. And so here we're in this really funky place now, right? And I want to strip away the politics for a moment. I want to look at the process in terms of, I think the process has been weak because people have a poor understanding of the way civics works and the way government works. And I want to welcome into the program a very good friend of ours. He is Father Bill Nicholas of the Archdiocese of San Francisco, and want to welcome him in to kind of help us navigate the historical context of these articles of impeachment relative to the votes taken today. Father Bill, welcome to the show. I appreciate you making time for us.
Good to be back, Brett.
So, you know, so many people are running around thinking, well, this is it. The president's been impeached. Now it's all shut down. It's over. He's done. It's finished. This is just the first step, and people don't seem to understand that. Your thought from a historical perspective on this, Father?
Well, I often wonder, you know, knowing you and I have had conversations on U.S. history and the Constitution, in addition to you know, my profession as a priest and matters of faith, but I recall back when President Clinton was impeached, and when the Senate had conducted their trial and they were getting ready to vote, the news pundits were saying such things as, we're awaiting the vote on the Senate to impeach the president.
Right.
And even the news pundits were getting it wrong, because the Senate does not impeach. It's the House of Representatives that impeaches, and that's what just happened a few moments ago. And you hear the phrase impeach thrown around so often that a lot of people confuse impeachment with throwing the president out of office. And impeachment is actually, I guess you could say, step three of the process. Step one would be the inquiry. Step two would be the Judiciary Committee approving articles. And step three is the entire House. And the next step is the trial, in which the Senate serves as a jury. The impeachment is done. And so now President Trump is only the third president to be impeached, the fourth to face impeachment. Nixon faced it, but did not. It resigned before he could be impeached.
Right.
I'm often wondering what people are thinking this evening when they hear the news President Trump has been impeached, if they're going to be surprised to wake up tomorrow morning and find out that Donald Trump is still the president of the United States. Because even on the news, you hear the news reporters using the word impeachment, as I said they did in Clinton's case, out of context of where it belongs, which is the House of Representatives.
You know, people oftentimes, and I want to know your thought if this is a fair analogy. Oftentimes you'll hear about people who they think they understand faith. In the case of the Christian faith or specifically the Catholic faith, you have people that have certain notions that are rattling around in their brains for whatever reason. And sometimes people are described as what you call poorly catechized. We sort of have a civic catechism in this country. There are founding documents. There are rules of the road. There are procedures, constitutional procedures. There are checks and balances. The average person out there, though, doesn't have much of a handle on that, do they? I mean, people need to be educated as to process and implication and outcomes, don't they? I feel like people, by and large, just don't understand how government works.
Which is true. And under President Trump, which I think kind of, it, to put it lightly, diminishes the credibility of this particular impeachment.
Right.
They've been talking about impeachment since shortly after he was inaugurated, and I even believe shortly after he was elected.
Right.
And reference has been made to that news article that said, let the impeachment begin. And people think, okay, you don't like the outcome of an election, then Congress can simply get rid of him in impeachment. But they forget, which the Republicans have constantly reminded in this debate, what's the charge? What is he being impeached for? And okay, so I think, you know, one of the articles of impeachment is abuse of power. And so they asked the question, what was the abuse of power? And in some context, it's also comparing what the what they accuse the president of doing with what they have other officials in the past have done. There's the videotape of Joe Biden give at least boasting about a quid pro quo. If it didn't happen, he sure is boasting that one did. And so they're asking the question about President Trump, what is the impeachable offense? And that hopefully in the Senate, they're going to, you know, clarify that. And, you know, there's a pretty good confidence that they just don't have the votes to convict him and remove him from office. So, but in the process, if there is to be a process, those questions will be asked. What exactly did they impeach him for? In looking at this over the last few weeks, it brought to mind the very first impeachment of a president, which was Andrew Johnson. And that occurred back in 1867-68.
Right.
And I also recently finished a book on the biography of Thaddeus Stevens, who was one of the big pushers for impeachment, a Republican congressman, staunchly abolitionist, and one of the radical Republicans. And for your listeners, if you don't know who Thaddeus Stevens was, if you saw the movie Lincoln, the Steven Spielberg movie, that was the role played by Tommy Lee Jones. He was a very much a firebrand radical Republican congressman. And reading his biography and in another book called Impeached by David Stewart, which came out about 10 years ago, there were multiple occasions, there were multiple attempts to impeach Andrew Johnson. And the third attempt is what finally got the traction, but it didn't get the vote in the Senate. He was impeached, but he was acquitted by one vote, actually, in the Senate, and Andrew Johnson was not thrown out of office. But there were actually three attempts made by the Republicans in Congress to impeach President Andrew Johnson, and it was finally on the third attempt when he violated a law that had been passed called the Tenure of Office Act, when President Johnson tried to replace the Secretary of War with his own person, that they impeached him. What was the offense? Violation of the Tenure of Office Act. He could not replace a member of his cabinet without approval of the Congress. Later, that law was overturned by the Supreme Court, but they had a concrete crime, or not crime, but a violation of the law that he did. But you could clearly see it was Republicans wanting to preserve the legacy of Abraham Lincoln against a Democrat, Lincoln's vice president, who was conducting Reconstruction in a way very different from what the Republicans and Lincoln had perhaps intended. But it was still very much a partisan impeachment with multiple attempts before something finally happened. You're seeing, I believe, that again right now, where you had the Mueller report. You had other issues that they brought up until finally they have the phone call to the president of Ukraine. And there's where, I guess, they got the traction to bring it to the point that they have now. The other two impeachments, actually, you could say there were violations committed, serious violations. Richard Nixon with regard to Watergate and on his part, the cover up and how he went about covering it up. And Bill Clinton with unfortunate subject matter, which was his love life. But it was a case of lying under oath and depriving a woman of her justice under the law. So you have very specific things. And granted, I think Clinton's, if I remember correctly, was also along party lines in terms of the vote to impeach. But like the very first impeachment of Johnson, here I think you're seeing the partisan games to protect ideologies and what's going to influence the future of this country. And we'll see how it plays out.
A final question for you, and I don't know that you necessarily have the answer, but I just would be curious as to your thoughts on this. Father Bill Nicholas joining us here from the Archdiocese of San Francisco. You see a nation divided. You're a student of history. You certainly saw at the time of the Civil War, the run-up to the Civil War, and the aftermath of the Civil War, a nation very divided. We saw it in the 1960s as well, obviously, right, where you saw a lot of people going at it and fighting and rioting in the streets, what have you. Are we in a post civility kind of world? Are we in a post bipartisan kind of world? I mean, have we just all gone to tribes and social media amplifies it? I mean, do you see a pathway by which people will work together again, or are people going to, as far as you can see, are they just going to kind of stay divided because it's comfortable?
Well, I think if you look at the the progression of our nation's history. You have that ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. Prior to the Civil War, you saw the great divide in our country. And as much as they like to say it is so divided today, and it is, people are very divided today, I don't think it's as bad as it was back then. Mm-hmm. You really have to go further to make it as bad as it was in the Civil War, because things were just coming apart at the seams. You had fights breaking out, literal brawls breaking out on the floor of the Senate, right, in, say, the Brooks-Sumner incident. You had violence in Kansas between abolitionists and pro-slave forces with regard to Kansas exercising popular sovereignty. Both sides were trying to stack the vote as Kansas was preparing to become a state. You actually saw bloodshed and violence breaking out there. You don't exactly see that here. You have a lot of very strong rhetoric. And and I certainly have noticed, people are very critical of Donald Trump for his demeanor, his tweets, and how he presents things and things he says. But neither side is completely innocent of the fiery rhetoric.
Right.
The Democrats would say that Republicans want to throw grandma over the cliff with their health care policies. And both sides, in many ways, have over-the-top rhetoric. But I don't think you've seen the kind of violence that you saw breaking out right before the Civil War, and even the kind of rioting you see in the you saw in the 60s that happened during the, I believe it was the 1968 Democratic Convention, mm-hmm, that descended into just chaos with the rioting that was going and the protesting that was going on outside. So while things are, I believe, this is just me as I see it,
sure,
the sentiment is very high and the tempers are very hot, but you aren't seeing it descend into the kind of violence that we saw prior to the Civil War and even among the protesting in the 60s. I think we have a ways to go before we get to that point. But right now, we still have the Constitution. As much as many people want to get rid of President Trump, and they're using the system, perhaps illegitimately, as many would say, to get rid of him in this process of impeachment, very vague, as some people say, articles of impeachment, it still has to go through the Senate. So in the end, the rule of law is going to prevail. And we are going to see in this real-life civics lesson, this is why we have a Senate.
Right.
The House of Representatives has to have its pulse on the population because they are elected every 2 years.
Sure.
The Senate is a little more stable, and originally it represented the state governments, which is
right,
why until the 17th Amendment, it was the states that appointed the senator, not the people electing them. But still, it is a much more deliberative body, a much more sober debate. And while you may still have some firebrands voting one way or the other in the Senate, you don't have it as much. And our founding fathers required a simple majority to impeach, but a two-thirds majority, mm-hmm, to convict and remove him from office. And in the end, I believe the hope in this is you're going to see the process that our founding fathers played out. The impeachment is there to keep a figure like a president from becoming a dictator and abusing,
sure,
his power. But the trial in the Senate is there to keep the House of Representatives from overstepping its bounds and impeaching someone frivolously. So the
right,
president has been impeached, but the next step is the Senate, and people pretty much know how it's going to go in the Senate. And that's why the Senate's there.
Yep.
That's why we have three branches of government to keep, mm-hmm, to keep themselves, the other two in check. But within the Congress, you have two branches, and one branch has two branches to keep itself in check.
Right.
And that's what we're going to be seeing playing out here. So this isn't just about Donald Trump. This is about the Senate and the House keeping each other in check. And
great
that's
stuff.
How the founding fathers set it up.
It's great stuff, as always. The genius of the founders, and a great bit of analysis from our own father here, Father Bill Nicholas. See, the founding fathers to Father Bill. Great stuff, as always,
okay,
talking to you. I wish you a little bit early, but a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I look forward to catching up with you in 2020, my friend. Be well, and
yes,
we'll talk again very soon, okay?
Okie doke. Looking forward to it. Merry Christmas.
Take care. Merry Christmas. Father Bill Nicholas, Archdiocese of San Francisco. Great insights. It's the Brett Winterbull Show.